Good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie C., and today is Sunday, December 14th, 2014, and this is a Vision for Youth Sunday Special Edition. A warm welcome to each of you, and so glad that you joined us. The share ID for Friday, December 12th, 2014, is 7106, 7106. Today, you will hear a special presentation, A Story of Transformation. The title of this presentation is Utterly Abandon Ourselves. After decades of surviving, scratching, and clawing at life, seemingly abandoned ourselves, we found the answer. We were driven by the habit of the action to survive. Strive so strong, yet we secretly feared that there was no way out. So we tried all the harder, believing to the core, we will conquer this or die. Finally broken to bits, we determined that there was no way out, at least of ourselves. Many of us came crawling into the rooms of OA because we heard that there was hope and the answer to our perplexing crisis. We watched and we learned from others what the solution would be, to utterly abandon ourselves. Here to unfold for you a story of transformation in just this way, our speaker will highlight these three very powerful action words, utterly abandon ourselves. It really is a rags-to-riches story, created anew right here in these rooms with the Program of Recovery. So without further ado, I would like to introduce to you today our guest speaker. She, too, is a student of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and very active in altruistic activities here at A Vision for You as well, for which we are absolutely grateful. So grab a seat and sit back as Elaine B. extends to you here her personal story. Welcome, Elaine B.
Thank you so much, Melanie. And thank you, everyone, for being on the line. It's a privilege to share my story here at A Vision for You. And I'm just going to open in a brief prayer to my higher power, whom I will call God throughout this presentation, and ask God that you would direct my words and my share so that perhaps something that I share would be of benefit and of use to the hearers. And I thank you for that. So, utterly abandoned. I was reflecting this morning on when I was a child, and it's often been repeated to me how my grandfather always used to say, that Elaine, she needs a lot of love. And I think that he saw something in me, a need, a desire, a hunger that somehow was not being met in this life, in this world, in my family, in school, in the different places that I was involved. And I know that one of my house rules when growing up was, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. And in my prayer meditation this morning, I was realizing that I definitely took those words to heart, and they were a foundation for a life of people-pleasing, trying to look into everybody's eyes to figure out what they wanted me to be so that I could make them happy. And that would make me feel happy, which it never really did, because I so hid myself in my real needs and my real desires and my real hungers and need for love. So I wasn't even connecting with people. It was this false front, this mask that I bore between myself and others in order to survive, really. And as I was reflecting in prayer this morning, I recognized the fact that I must have redefined that family rule, that house message, of if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. And I began to live under a kind of a rule, if you can't feel anything nice, don't feel anything at all. And I have been meditating on my daily pursuit of feeling good, my daily need to find ways that I could find ease and comfort, because it's all I ever wanted to feel. And it's what I rarely did feel. I often felt dis-ease and discomfort everywhere I went, in my relationships, in school, in family. I felt very lonely and alone, even though I had a lot of people around me, it was always because I was picking up a mechanism. Either I was picking up, a mask that I could wear, peering into your eyes, mirroring back what I thought you wanted me to be, or I was picking up food, something sweet to bring some ease and comfort into my life, or I was picking up other things. I was picking up drugs and alcohol and inappropriate connections with men in order to get that sense of ease and comfort, to find that way of sweetening up my life. And I utterly abandoned myself to that. I remember being 12 years old, 13 years old, lying in bed in the morning before I even got out of bed, trying to think about what I could get that day. I had mastered the art of stealing food, and I knew that there was going to be something sweet that I could go take spoonfuls of or handfuls of in the other room that I had long set up so that I would have things around me to put in my mouth. And yet I had the disease of more, so I was thinking, what guy could I be with? What drugs could I get that day? And it was the first meditation every single morning. How am I going to escape this life of disease and discomfort? How am I going to find something that will bring me the ease and comfort that I need to make it through one day? I utterly abandoned myself to that lifestyle. And you know what? It took many, many years before I really recognized, you know, this isn't working. This really isn't working for me. And I really needed to try something else. Although there were steps of progress along the way. I do remember at one point being desperate and alone, living in Texas, and somebody coming to me and giving me a message of hope about God that that was difficult for me to receive at the time. I just didn't have space for it. I had all my coping mechanisms, although I was desperate and alone and and afraid most of the time. And yet, years later, I did find myself having a big, long battle of wills with God that caused me to come up surrendered, come up utterly abandoned to release some of the things that were killing me, and that was drugs, alcohol, and pretty inappropriate relationships with men, and walked into the rooms of churches. And in churches, I found kind and loving people, but I also found a lot of food. That was an okay way, that was the acceptable way to get the ease and comfort that I needed. And so that became my sole source of ease and comfort. Even though I did begin to build a relationship with God over the years, and I actually reflect back on a friend that said to me, after I had gained over 100 pounds of extra weight because of my ways of trying to manage life and disease and discomfort, this person said to me, I wonder what you're really like underneath all that. And, you know, I didn't really know what they were talking about. I didn't know that I had so stuffed all my feelings, all of my emotions, all of who I really was under pounds and pounds and pounds and pounds of food. I hear some people talk about, you know, they pat their belly and they say, this is an investment. And for me, it was an investment. It was also a buffer. It was just a buffer to life. Of course, men no longer wanted to be around me with an extra 100 pounds on my body. And I was still very lonely and still very distant from other people, although I still had a lot of people around me. I was climbing the corporate ladder, which brought its own levels of stress and discomfort. Yet, you know, I was fairly successful. I graduated high school early, did make it through college, and, you know, I was climbing the ladder. I was, you know, I was taught you work hard and you play harder. And so so that's what I did. I would work. I would deny the hunger, the growling belly. When I got out of work, I would drive through one place and pack up such a huge meal, I'd be busting at the seams. But by the time I got home, I wanted to stop at the grocery store so I could go down the bakery aisle and the frozen food aisle and the candy aisle, because you can't just have one. You know, because one thing doesn't necessarily do the trick. If I have this and I add a little of that, it might, maybe, but when I'm done, I always want more. I had the disease of more. So me and Ben and Jerry and Eminem would put our feet up and sit watching TV with the cat, and the tears would come. The loneliness would come. The emptiness and the despair. The not knowing how to manage my life, not knowing how to manage my food, not knowing how to manage my finances, not knowing how to manage my work, my relationships, everything that had surrounded me. I did not know. I didn't know. I was doing the best I could, and I'm telling you, I was stepping on the toes of my fellows in the workplace. I think of it now. There must have been crunching happening every day, because it was really important that people liked me, that my bosses liked me. It was less important that the people who worked for me liked me, because they had to be there. And so I would step on their toes, and oh man, there must have been so much crunching going on, especially with that extra 100 pounds on my body. And, you know, they would serve me, and I would put myself in a position later to be hurt, you know, by the employee who thought that she could do everything, you know, better than me, and just all the different things. I did not know how to deal with those diseases and those discomforts. And I just was just striving to keep all the plates rolling in the air, all the balls moving. And I wandered into the rooms of OA at one point, and the one thing that I heard was no flour, no sugar. And then the rest of it was like German. Ba 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 ba, no flour, no sugar. Ba 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 ba, no flour, no sugar. Ba ba ba. I was not ready to hear any message. And actually, I don't even remember flour. I just heard sugar. And so I put down sugar. I put down sugar for about 2 or 3 months and probably lost about 10 or 15 pounds. And I thought, oh, this is easy. I could do this. I could do this when I want to, if I want to, how I want to, but I didn't want to because I needed the sense of ease and comfort. So back out in the rooms I went, and what did I do? I utterly abandoned myself. I utterly abandoned myself to the fact that I am fat. I have a sister who's bulimic. I have another sister who is anorexic, and I was just fat. So I wore my fat not just like a shield and a buffer from life, but I wore it like a badge. I just embraced it. I said, this is it. This is who I am. This is how I am. But time and time again, going back to that couch with my feet up on the table and a cat in my lap and the TV on and the tears running down my face, because I was desperately alone. It was no solution for me. And even my times in church, you know, I'd come home and I'd feel lonely. I would get together with friends and we'd have a wonderful time, and I'd have to go immediately to a 7-Eleven to pick up something so that I could make that good feeling of being close to something continue. I needed to be able to manage my sense of ease and comfort. I needed it to be something I could grab for and make happen instantly. I needed to be able to get out of those uncomfortable feelings that I couldn't ever identify. I very, very solidly trained my body to believe that hunger was hunger, sorrow was hunger, fear was hunger, doubt was hunger, insecurity was hunger, resentment was hunger, sorrow was hunger, joy was hunger. Everything was a reason to eat, and eating was the solution for everything. And the rut that I paved running to the refrigerator and the pantry, the rut that I paved became such an automatic default that no matter what feeling I felt, it manifested as hunger. So much so to the point where I finally did come into the rooms of OA, I was on automatic drip. I had sugar in my mouth 24, every waking moment of the day. I would put one thing in my mouth after another, you know, sucking on hard candy or whatever. Oh, man, I think about the conversations of somebody with candy in their mouth and my poor people that I worked with, you know, just hearing me move that candy around in my mouth all the time. It's so sad. I remember having a Christmas party, and I invited all the people that I knew at church, and I prepared food for days. And the day of the party finally arrived. I've got food everywhere and decorations, and one person came. I was not connecting with people. I had a lot of people in my life, but I was not connecting with people. I felt I spent so much more time building relationship with food than I did with people, but only one person came. And I could not wait for that one person to leave so that I could be alone with my food. And did I send her home with food? No. No, I did not. That was all for me. And I had my own kind of Christmas party. And I ate for days. But it was close to the end of my time of really recognizing my despair. I remember staying with a longtime friend as I went to the funeral of a family that I had gotten very close with. The mom had died, and stayed with this friend. And when I went to the graveside funeral, the person who was officiating said to me, you know, whenever I see you and your friend together, I wonder, why don't you just do it? Why don't you just get married? This is a person I had met in his church 20 years before, 16 years before, something like that. And I went back and talked to him about it and talked about my loneliness and my despair. And at that point in time, he said, why don't we? Why don't we? And so on Christmas Eve after midnight mass, he did propose to me. And so that was an extra impetus for me to put down the food. And so so I decided I was going to put down sugar and I was going to go back to OA. And on January 1st, 2004, we had an engagement party, and I had, you know, feasted on the cake that my sister-in-law prepared. And that was the last sugar I had eaten for quite some time. In fact, I managed to live without consuming sugar for 9 years. And I walked into the rooms of OA, and I heard somebody qualify. The first thing I thought is, what can your spiritual program? I didn't know this was going to be a spiritual program. What can these people teach me about God? I've been going to church for a long time now. I have a good relationship with God. But I heard somebody say that every morning they get on their knees and they ask God for help. And every night they get on their knees and they say thank you. And I, after years, I had never heard anybody say that before. And I'm like, well, maybe there is something unique here that I can learn about in addition to the food. And so the first thing I heard was you needed a sponsor. And at, I think it was like my third meeting, I heard somebody qualify, and that person had what I wanted. That's what I heard. You get to find somebody who has what you want and ask them how he or she is achieving it. And so I asked this person if they would sponsor me, and she said yes. She gave me two phone numbers. She gave me the phone number for a phone meeting, and she gave me her phone number, and she said, call me tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. and tell me what you can eat for the day. Somebody else had already given me a food plan. And so I did that. So immediately phone meetings became part of my regular program, and which was great because I was working very long hours with a long commute, and I could listen to the meetings on the phone while I was commuting. And that was fabulous. And this person and I began a really great relationship. I had heard some things about the food plan that I was given, that some people were getting sick on it. I went to a nutritionist. She made some minor changes, and that was my food plan for several years. And it wasn't long before the weight came off my body. Much of the weight came off my body. And we had set our wedding date for 6 months, after we became engaged. And so on June 26th, we got married, and I was able to, instead of being in a 24 size wedding gown, I was able to be in a size 18 wedding gown. I have a picture of a dear friend and I that when I give my story sharing pictures, I often show her picture. She was at my wedding shower, and she was my binge buddy. We would go all kinds of places, and we would go out to eat, and we would get the salad and the main course and always the dessert, always room for the dessert. No matter how much we had stuff, there's always room for the dessert. And that friend of mine she died a year later from this disease. And that makes me so sad. But it's part of my story because this is a very deadly disease, and I'm very fortunate it didn't take me out. And so while I was in OA, the phone meeting that I was given really focused on the tools of recovery. And so I learned quickly about making phone calls and, you know, calling my sponsor and making going to meetings and doing lots of things. And when I talked to my sponsor every day, she helped me figure out how I could manage my food when I was showing up for life. Oh, we have a business meeting. What do I do? Oh, we're going to a wedding. What do I do? Even my own wedding, she was able to help me plan my food in a way that I could remain abstinent at my own wedding. And I didn't feel sorry for myself. I didn't feel any of those things. I will say, however, that even though, you know, I had lost several sizes and a number of pounds, I felt disconnected at my wedding. I still was not connecting with people at the level that I really deeply desired to. And that makes me sad sometimes today. But it was the way it was. It was part of my journey. And so I actually took that sponsor with me every day. We took a month honeymoon, and I talked to her every single day and committed my food and learned how to eat in this program. And, you know, with other fellows in the room, I learned recipes. I learned all kinds of things. My mom moved out when I was 12, and, you know, all I ate was candy and junk and fast food and, you know, all of that stuff all my life. I never learned to eat properly. I never learned to prepare food properly. And I'm forever grateful for OA, for a place where I could go and do that. I got a lot of group support, and it was something that I really, really needed. And you know what? I had to utterly abandon myself to that food plan. I had to utterly abandon myself to the tools and to what I was learning and hearing in the meeting in order to begin to make it, you know, to make a start. And so that's what I did for, you know, I don't know how many years it was, 3, 4, 5 years, something like that. I was maintaining a goal weight, and it was okay for me to add some food. And of course, I'm always talking to people about food. What are you eating? What can you eat? What, you know, what do you eat? And I heard that there were some things that people were eating that I wanted to eat. And so I began to add them to my food plan. And you know, sometimes my sponsor would have kind of a reaction to what I was saying. And, you know, my people-pleasing nature, I just decided that over time it would be a lot easier, instead of getting a negative response, that if I just committed my popcorn as vegetables, then I could have it every day. And I would get away with something. And this disease, you know, they say it's out in the parking lot doing push-ups. It was always trying to find a way in. It was always trying to find the loophole. And it found a loophole in that. Another loophole it found was in wine, in drinking wine. I remember going to a board meeting, and the chairman of the board was a gourmet chef, and his wife was a wine connoisseur, and she would pair wines with the dinner. And I had had a glass of wine on occasion here and there, and I was really looking forward to having whatever they selected that night. And I remember telling my sponsor, and I'm like, well, this is a drink, it's not a food, but I thought I'd tell you. And it started a tug of war. She didn't think it was a good idea, and I did, and so I did what I thought was right. She called it taking my will back, and I didn't know what that meant at the time, but that is what I did. And I remember slurring at that board meeting. How embarrassing. Oh, my gosh. By the end of the night, I could feel that wine, and I called my husband. He got very upset that I was doing a long drive after having drinking. And it was a long time before I could accept that it was sugar in a glass. And it was. The one thing I saw as soon as I came into the rooms, because I'm in an environment where there are people who have worked the steps, and up in the Framingham area, I went into a meeting, and I could tell a difference immediately between the difference of sort of the sanity and the security and the assurance and a sense of ease and comfort that these people had that had done the steps the way they're laid out in the big book. So another thing that I did after I got married and moved down and got settled into my program was I began a pursuit of doing the steps. My husband is in recovery as well, and I was in a meeting for the loved ones of that particular program, and we decided that we were going to do the steps because I kept saying, I got to do the steps. I can't even come here anymore if you know, I need to do the steps. And so we did, and we were advised that because we were sort of codependents of people who were addicts, that we should not have sponsors. We should just do the work together as a group. And we did, and I did a good form. I did a good 4, 5, 6, 7, gave it all away. And I just did it to the best of my understanding, which was pretty limited. When I got to step 9, I'm like, this is crazy. I can't go out. I don't know what I'm doing. So I tried to find another way, and I started going to All Addiction Big Book Step Studies, and they had some sort of ground rules. You know, you listen to all 12 steps before you start doing the work, and you you don't say anything until you're in step 9, and you there was never a focus on the doctor's opinion, and that it didn't seem to be required that you were abstinent when you did the work. I don't remember really talk about that at all. And so I started doing the work, and I actually worked with one sponsor who actually ended up going back out. So I had to find another sponsor after 2 years of writing. Said throw everything away and start over again, and so I did with some resentment, and wrote for about 2 years, and that didn't work out. It just didn't work out. They weren't in OA, and I couldn't get the time or the attention or the focus that I felt I needed, and so I started with somebody else and wrote for another 2 years, and it's just a very detailed process the way it was going, and I really wasn't dedicated to it. And during that time, that's when I'm having, you know, popcorn, and I'm having wine, and I'm getting using comfort out of those things, and I'm having it more and more often. You know, it got to the point where I was having popcorn every single day, and not just regular popcorn, Orville Redenbacher sweetened but not with sugar popcorn, and man, it was a mess. It was a mess. I was gaining 10 pounds a year the last 3 years. And when I finished doing the resentment part of my turnaround, which from when I started doing the big book to when I finished that part was 6 years, 6 years of work, I asked my sponsor, who I absolutely love. She's so patient and wonderful, and still see her in meetings, and she's awesome. Everybody I worked with is great, but they're part of my journey, you know. And so I got the instructions for the fear inventory. I knew it was going to take another year. I thought, I have a good relationship with God. I've learned how to manage my food. I understand these tools. I can go do this with God. I believe God has a greater freedom that he wants me to have. And I believe that that's really true. And so I went out of the rooms, and, you know, first I had some rolls, and then I, you know, about a month later, I had a little candy, and then I had some cupcakes that somebody made, and then the next thing I knew, it was my daily pursuit. And I was back again to lying in bed in the morning thinking about, where am I going to have sugar today? What taste am I going to satisfy? What am I going to do? My husband went ballistic. He's like, you've taken another lover. You're having an affair. It caused so much damage in my marriage, and I just didn't get it because I was back in the cloud. I was back in the food. I was back in the fog. I did not get it. I didn't get how painful it was for him to see me going back into the food. And I quickly gained another 10 pounds. I decided I was going to hide things from him instead of facing, just like I was hiding, you know, my popcorn by committing it as vegetables. I was going to hide stuff. And I remember going through Valentine's Day and doing just what I used to do. I remember the candy will be on sale the day after Valentine's Day. I went and got 2 boxes at 50% off. Thought this will last me a while. Of course, it didn't. Went back 75% off. About 2 more. I was right back in the thick of it. And I was like, wow, I was so discouraged and so disappointed, thinking, oh man, my self-knowledge isn't working. What? You know, I thought I had a good relationship with God. What? You know, the big book talks about you may be working with somebody who has even greater religious training or background than you, but you might have to say, is that working for you? You know, it was not working for me. And during that time, I just was continuing to go into meetings, and instead of getting up and sharing, I was sitting in the back row, kind of rocking and plotting, where am I going to go? I remember being so upset when I would go to where I was going to get that special something after the meeting, and I'd see OA people in there because they couldn't see me getting it, even though I had gained 40 pounds back of the 100 and something that I had lost. They couldn't see me getting more food. They didn't know, you know. And so I decided, okay, I'll do what I've heard. I'm going to do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I started doing 90 meetings in 90 days. On the 45th day, I came into OA, and somebody gave me the phone number for A Vision for You. I listened the very next day. The topic was, they call this plain insanity. And I listened to that meeting, and it was my story. It was my story. It was plain insanity for me to think that I could manage this on my own. It was plain insanity. I had to find another way. I had to do something else. And the hope that was generated through this person who talked about the steps and how they had impacted their life and how it had relieved them of this, not just the phenomenon of craving, but the mental obsession. And what I recognize, it was 9 years before I picked up sugar, that I recognized that more and more that mental obsession was growing, that someday, somehow, I could control my food and I could be like a quote-unquote normal eater. And that's what drove me out. I really believed it was true for me. Somehow, someday, I'll do this. I'm only eating a little bit every day. I can do this. It's just one thing. I can do this. It's all natural ingredients. I can do this. You know, I'm not eating all day long like I used to. I can do this, but I could not do it. I couldn't do it. And so I had to utterly abandon myself to the fact that I am a compulsive overeater. I am. And I remember going to a meeting. I knew they were going to be sharing on the tools, and I was recovered at that point. And I'm like, what was the difference? What was the difference? And the difference to me was the doctor's opinion. The doctor's opinion, which I had heard allergy to the body, I had read those words, but I didn't understand that there were things that were alcoholic to me that were not necessarily alcoholic to other people. Just because those other people in OA who had handed me a food plan were eating other things didn't mean that I could eat what they could eat, didn't mean that I could eat how they ate. I had to discover for myself what my own food plan was going to be. But I'll tell you what, I may not have hung in there. I heard the promise and everything, but I may not have hung in there if I didn't hear somebody share in one of my very first meetings that we used to get our ease and comfort from food, and now we get our ease and comfort from God. Because ultimately, I was an ease and comfort addict. I needed a solution for the dis-ease and discomfort that I felt when I was in a house full of loved ones, when I was in a room full of friends, when I was on a phone call with a close person, when I was in a board meeting, when I was in a staff meeting, when I was at church and it was in between services and there were 100 people around me chattering. I needed a way to manage my dis-ease and my discomfort. And I was so thrilled to find that I could get that in God. I had tried, but I didn't know that there was wreckage between me and God. I used to say that there was a refrigerator, a 7-Eleven, and a grocery store that stood between me and God. But I didn't realize that there was all kinds of resentment and dishonesty and self-seeking that stood in the way, and other character defects, pride, arrogance, that stood in the way between me and God. And as I came into this room and I utterly abandoned myself to this program, a miracle happened to me. One of the things that I really needed to do, first of all, was utterly abandon myself to the food, to rigorous honesty with my food. No more committing popcorn as, you know, as this or that. No more saying, oh, an extra eighth of an ounce on the scale, that doesn't matter. No more justifying alcohol as as a drink instead of, you know, sugar in a glass. And rigorous honesty. I had to find a food sponsor that would allow me to give her everything that I eat. And that's what I have to do today. When I'm at home, I weigh and measure all of my food, and I commit every bite to my sponsor. And I explain if I have to take, you know whatever. I'm rigorously honest with my food, and I have to be, because there's no need for me to let it take up space in my head. I ate something on our anniversary last summer. I had one bite, and I was like zing inside. And I was like, wow, this I can't have any more of this. And the next day, I could just feel it all through my body. And I called my food sponsor and talked it through, and it was a combination of three ingredients that are all okay. They're all on my food plan. And she's like, it's okay, honey. It's on your list. You're okay. It's all right. You only have one bite. You didn't keep going with it. And, you know, it's okay. But it had just triggered something in me that I was really afraid of. And I ended up calling my big book sponsor and talking to her about it too. And then I just had to let it go. I just have to utterly abandon myself to a food plan. And you know what? It was a food plan that was not of my own making. When I first called my big book sponsor and started working with her, all I wanted to talk about was the food. Help me get it in order. And she said, I'm a compulsive overeater just like you. You need to get a food plan that is not of your own making. And probably not from another compulsive overeater. So I met with a nutritionist, and she helped me figure out a food plan that is helping me lose that that extra weight that I put on. I've lost 30 of the 40 pounds since July 11, 2013 is my date of returning to abstinence. Thank you, God. Then I needed to utterly abandon myself to God. Now, there must have been a problem there, because even though I was in, you know, doing the work, there must have been a problem there. And I needed to find a definition of God that I could utterly abandon myself to. And so so that really took a reevaluation of who God was and what that relationship looked like for me. I think of the Nestle plunge. And I need to be able to throw open my arms and fall back into the safety net of a God that can give me the ease and comfort that I need as I need it all the way through my program. And so that's what I needed to do. I thank God for the big book that says, you know, help put aside your prejudices by coming up with a definition of your higher power that is different from where you are. I'm spending a lot more time on the past and a lot less on the present. But so I'm sorry for that. But I did come up with a definition of God that I could utterly abandon myself to. And that was the first step for me for doing the steps in a way that was much quicker. I had to utterly abandon myself to doing this work. And I did my fourth step, and rather than going back through everything I could possibly think of, every person I ever met and every institution I could ever think of, my sponsor instructed me just to do the stuff that was carrying around in my head, just the stuff that I'm struggling with, because she said, don't worry about it. You'll have 10 steps after that. If other stuff comes up that, you know, you run into somebody from your history that all of a sudden triggers a feeling, I was able to do the steps and look through everything. I was able to give it away to a loving sponsor and just, just get rid of it. And as I was getting the feedback from her, I began to see for the first time, after all those years of doing turnarounds, I didn't see my selfishness. I didn't see my dishonesty. I saw my self-seeking behavior. I knew I had a whole list of ways of managing life so that I could get ease and comfort and get my way or try to get my way. But I did not see my selfishness, and I did not recognize the fact that I was ruled by 100 forms of fear, that fear ruled every single thing that I did, and I didn't know what to do with it. And now I really understand that that I have to utterly abandon myself to God, and I have to trust God. And so, you know, doing a daily seven step where I ask God to remove the character defects, one of the things that's been a great gift for me, and I hear somebody often share it on the line, is just to accept that I am good and bad, that everybody is good and bad, that I don't have to just ignore everything that's bad in the world and live up to that rule. If you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. Or if you can't feel anything nice, don't feel anything at all. After a recent family visit, I was clean and clear enough to come back and just grieve over some of the things that have happened in my family, to really just spend a day looking at things that have happened in my life and just cry and just let it go. It didn't take over. I didn't need using comfort. I was finally in a safe place in the hands of a loving God where I could just breathe it and let it go. And I'm very, very grateful for that. The other thing that I really need to utterly abandon myself to is, well, I just want to say in step nine, you know, I learned that there was a girl my brother's age that had her family owned the drugstore that I stole a lot of my candy from. And she said to him one day, "I always got afraid when I saw your sister come in because I knew she was going to steal from us." And, you know, that hadn't shown up ever before. I had no idea. But that I got to do the work around that, and I got to do a ninth step that was so meaningful for me and brings tears to my eyes. And so doing that step of clearing out the wreckage of the past between me and others was really helpful. But I needed to clear out the wreckage between God and I. And with this new God of my understanding, it was safer to do that. It was safer to let go of my resentment, you know, that I was single for so long, and just all of those things. And as more things come up in my life, I'm able to do it with step 10. I'm so grateful for step 10. I have to utterly abandon myself to the fact that I have to work this program every day. You know, that on the other side of my first pass through the steps, that there was not the problem-free life that was like a mirage, you know, out in the desert that, you know, just kept getting farther and farther as I tried to pursue it, that I need to utterly abandon myself every single day, that when problems come up, that's what the big book tells me as I read about step 10 and 11, is that every day, all throughout the day, we need to carry God's will, not mine, a God that I can trust, a God that loves me, a God that cares about me, a God that knows everything about everybody in my life. These are some of the definitions that were important for me to have to utterly abandon myself to this God. A God that was interested in my, in things, you know, going okay for me. Am I getting ease and comfort? That I'm not a bad girl, that I need that. That, I'm not a bad girl if I don't have the answer. I'm not a bad girl if I have to say I'll get back to you, or I just don't know. And so so I utterly abandon myself every day that, you know, as stuff comes up, and I remind myself every day, to be watching for selfishness, dishonesty, fear, and resentment, and to process it with somebody, you know, to ask God to remove it, process it with somebody, to make amends if I've harmed anybody, but also to turn my attention to someone I can help. And that's something else that I have to utterly abandon myself to, is working with others. I cannot keep this program if I'm not doing 10, 11, and 12 every day. And I do 1, 2, and 3 every day. I still get on my knees first thing in the morning and just admit my powerless, not just over food. My life is unmanageable, every aspect of my life. And, you know, but I have come to believe that a power greater than myself, that I had to redefine, that I have to remind myself of who He is so that I can utterly abandon myself to Him. And then to do that, to turn my will and my life over to that higher power's care one day at a time. And then I notice that if I'm feeling squirrely, if I'm feeling kind of off and not great, and I am doing my work with God and still just not feeling okay, it has been a utter surprise to me that the one thing that brings me the same kind of joy that a burst of sweetness in my mouth used to bring is working with others. And I also find that for me, it's the feeling like if you haven't had a shower for a few days, there's one saying I heard that, you know, if you miss one day with God, God knows it. If you miss 2 days with God, you know it. If you miss 3 days with God, everybody knows it. I love that. There's another joke, too, that comes to mind, which is, what's the difference between me and God? God never thinks he's me. And so I've had to put down my managing life and managing others' lives and utterly abandon myself to a will that I don't know. I don't know the future. When I wake up in the morning, I don't know what is going to be that day. But one thing I've discovered is that if I don't utterly abandon myself to, you know, trying to seek that God's will in my 11th step, and even in the 10th step where it says all throughout the day, we pause and we ask for what the next step will be. And the big book promises us that it's going to be problems every day. It says that God will give us what we need to take care of such problems. So that problem-free life is elusive for me. Yet now I have a new employer that will give me everything that I need if I stay close to him and perform his work well. And the important part of that work is that I'm working with others every day. And so I have noticed in myself, just like if I don't take a shower, oh my gosh, if I didn't brush my teeth, if I don't work with others, that, you know, after 1 day, God knows it. After 2 days, I know it. After 3 days, everybody knows it. I need to get in the rooms and working with fellows. And one of the promises of the big book is that that becomes the bright spot of our day. And it is absolutely true for me. And every time I work with somebody or even take a 10-step call, it's my practice to, invite God in, because I don't know the answers. You know, I'm very limited. I have very limited knowledge and resource. But if I tap into a power greater than myself, the symbol of resource that I bring can be matched with an ocean of wisdom and provision and guidance that might somehow trickle through my little symbol to help somebody else today. And I'm just so grateful that the symbolfuls of comfort and ease that I was able to get through something in a bag or a box or even in a man or a glass, those things will never meet my needs. They will never guide me and direct me in a way that will make me of maximum use to God and to others, which is, you know, my primary purpose, to carry this message of recovery. And but when I lean into my God, when I ask for help, it is never far. And I'm often amazed at the ways that God is able to direct my steps. And though I don't have a problem-free life, though now I don't feel hunger when I feel anger, I feel anger. When I don't feel hunger when I feel sorrow or grief, I get to feel those feelings today, and I don't have to run away from them. I don't have to hide them. I can trust that, between the rooms and God, that I'll be able to get through it, that I'm not going to be in a dark place I'll stay in forever. And I still feel like, you know, I finished this work over a year ago. I've been abstinent for a year and a half or so. And I know that I've just come into the threshold. I'm so thrilled that I was not have to teach on the big book, because I'm just a student and feel so honored to listen to A Vision for You and all these people who have years of recovery and experience studying this book that has changed my life. And to be there with lots of people who are dedicated to the same thing is a great privilege and honor. But I can tell my story, and with God's help, I hope it's touched some of you. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Elaine B. This walk through your personal life that transferred so much experience, strength, and hope has given us so much of yourself today. Thank you very much for that. And just a quick word to our audience, you may be wondering about how to contact Elaine B., and we will give out Elaine's information at the end of the meeting, just right after closing, so please stay with us for that. Elaine, there may very well be some fellows wishing to ask you some questions this morning, and if you are available, I would like to open up the next 20 or 30 minutes, if you have that kind of time, to our audience to do just that.
Yes, I do. That would be my privilege. Thank you, Melanie.
Thank you. Who would like to ask Elaine a question about her presentation this morning? Press star one, please.
Hi, my name is Dawn D. I need to ask you a question.
Good morning, Dawn. Please go ahead with your question.
I just want to, first I want to say thank you for your service. And my heart goes out to your friend. You said that she had passed. And I was wondering, and I hear that a lot in the OA meetings, is what kinds of things that you die of when, you know, you're eating? I mean, when you overeat, you know. And also hear that you can die a knife and a fork. A knife and a fork can kill you. And I was just wondering what kinds of things, you know, you can die of when you overeat. Thank you.
Thank you, Dante, for your question. It's a good question. One thing comes to mind that I've heard somebody share in my face-to-face home meeting here in Massachusetts. What she says, and I can so relate to, was that, you know, she knew her only way out was either, you know, insanity or death. And she despaired of her own life and thought of taking her life. And she said she didn't really want her life to end. She wanted the pain to stop. But there are some people who do take their own lives. And I've heard that compulsive overeating is a slow form of suicide. In terms of other ways that we can die from compulsive overeating, I know of a man that I so admire in the rooms who was told by two doctors within 2 hours of each other that they didn't want to treat him because he was going to die a very, very painful death because of high blood pressure. For me, after my just 10 months in the rooms, I had put down the sugar, and it was 3 months later, and my doctor said, wow, your long-term, your current sugar level is fine, but your long-term one says that you're almost borderline diabetes. And I probably would have been registered diabetes if I took that test any earlier. I know that's a common way, but there are many, many ways that people can die. And if you have specific questions, you may want to consult your doctor about it, about, you know, what are the things I need to be concerned about. But the biggest promise I want to give you is that you don't need to eat that way. My sponsor always told me, if you get a food plan and you stick to your food plan and you do these steps the way that they're laid out in the big book, you never have to eat compulsively again. And for me, my experience is that there's a neutrality around the food. If I notice the food lining up, to me, that's an indication that I have a need. There's something going on to me that's registering as hunger, that's registering as a desire for ease and comfort through food. So I have a very significant real need, and I need to get with God or get with a fellow and process. Is there something going on? Do I have a resentment that I want to eat over or a fear? So thanks for your question. I hope I answered it all right, and with that, I pass.
Thank you, Don D.
Hi, my name is Charles. I got a question.
Hi, good morning, Charles. Go ahead with your question.
Morning, Melanie. My name is Charles, a recovered visionary guest for today. I don't believe you covered this, but I'm just going to throw it out here anyway. What's your suggestion if you have a sponsee that has finished up step three, however, has not let go of the fear? I suggested that sponsee go over page 63 and 64, read page 24 in the top of 25 in the OA 12 and 12 as well. What's your insight and what's your suggestion if you have a sponsee? I know the ultimate answer, but, you know, if you're trying with this person, but this person won't let go of the fear, what's your suggestion? If you could shed some light on that, I'd greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
quick question, Charles. Thank you for your question. Is that, do you mean a fear of a higher power or?
No, just fear.
Just fear. Okay. Thank you so much. That's a really good question. And, you know, fear is a very common manifestation for addicts. In fact, the big book talks about that our life is riddled through with 100 forms of fear. And they cause us to make decisions that in the end cause us harm. And that certainly is my circumstance. I see so many places that my decisions based on fear cause me harm. Charles, my understanding is that when we begin to do step three, and to the best of our ability, we're at the very beginning of starting a relationship with a power greater than ourselves to see us through, that we immediately need to get into the step work. And when we get through the resentments, then we have an opportunity to look at our fears. And one of the things that, you know, I feel is important is that we even include God on our inventory, that if we have any resentments or fears about God or anything else, that that's the time and the place that we have an opportunity to address those. So if you have somebody who's in step three, what has been pointed out to me is that the big book talks about immediately and right away. I think those are the words it uses between step three and step four. I'm trying to open the book, but you know what it was brought out to me is, you know, how quick is that? How quick is immediately? And so one of the things that is different for me in the way that I did the steps with my sponsor that I met through A Vision for You. And there are many, many different ways of working the steps, and you know, whatever works for you is great. But the way that I did it was to move through the steps very quickly. For me, that was very important. It took me about three to 4 months. After taking step three, the big book says, next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is to take a personal house cleaning. Which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision is a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Our liquor was only a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. And I think that in that step four, that's where if immediately, at once, we launch out into that course, that we'll be able to identify and look at fear in an entirely different way. I hope that helps. And I pass.
Thank you, Charles H. Who's
this
next?
Is Amy.
Question.
This is Janice G. Amy.
I heard Amy G. And then who else?
Janice B.
Anybody else?
Kathy K. Please.
Kathy K. Let's go with those three. For Elaine right now. Good morning, Amy G. What's your question for Elaine?
Yes, great. Mel, thank you so much. And thank you, Elaine, so much. It's such a joy to be able to hear people live on Sunday. It's awesome. Thank you so much for your share. First, just wanted to comment. I mean, what a beautiful testimony or showing of what happens when we just work the tools of the program, and what happens when we just work the steps without the tools of the program, and then what happens when the two come together, and the beauty and the transformation that occurs, and that was reflected in your story. And I guess my question is, or maybe if you could reiterate or elaborate, you know, when those two things came together and it finally clicked for you, understanding then the idea of the physical allergy and the mental obsession, how that came together for you. Because in my humble opinion, I know that there's a struggle for those that slip and slide throughout, wondering, you know, hey, I've worked the steps, but I've slipped, or the mental obsession is still alive and well because maybe some tools aren't being worked. And it showed in your testimony of how the two came together, that there is a balance between the two. And I was just wondering if maybe you could elaborate or give some, you know, some more details on how that came together for you. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Amy T. I appreciate that question. Yes, it's so amazing to me. You know, the big book talks about that the purpose of the book is to guide us to a higher power that will bring about personality change that's sufficient to bring about recovery, to that when our spiritual malady is addressed, that we clear up physically and mentally. And I'm so grateful for that. And, you know, for me, it was just plow through the steps, plow through the steps. I wasn't even looking for results. I'm just plow through the steps. Do what you have to do. Do it quickly. Because that six-year trek, you know, I wanted to get through it quickly, but I also wanted to do it thoroughly. The book talks about fearlessly and thoroughly. So I really wanted to get everything that was going on with me out, down on paper, trusting that if I missed anything with 10 or 11, I would pick it up. And we never know when those spiritual awakenings are going to happen. I had two significant ones, as my sponsor said back to me, you know, that just to see my selfishness and how I was running my life. Oh, my gosh. You know, it was months after that. I actually had to withdraw from my face-to-face meetings because one of the things I did during those 6 years was I began to wander into, well, this phone meeting is doing steps that way and this is doing this one and I'm going to call this person and I'm going to see what they're doing and I'm going to add this and I'm going to do that. I needed to withdraw from everything and just do the steps the way they're laid out in the book, quickly with a sponsor, completely abstinent. And I was willing to do my food plan. Of course, I had a wedding dress that I was going to be, you know, fitting for in a matter of months, which helped inspire my willingness to be dedicated to my food plan when I first got it. I came in with my nutritionist food plan, which I love. It's the best. It was so great. And so I was willing to do that, but it really was months later that I was driving to an OA meeting. I finally was coming back in the rooms. At first, that was a little bit of a challenge for me because it was very different. And I wanted to come in and, you know, some, you know, because there are a lot of people who are working the steps that are still overweight because I don't think there's that focus on the doctor's opinion. And that's when I was thinking about sharing on the tool and sharing the doctor's opinion. And I just had the dawning awakening that those two had married together and that was the difference for me. The other thing was moving through the steps more quickly than I had in the past. There's no right or wrong way to do this. You have to, you know, I'm grateful for every step that I took. But that's when it dawned on me. And what I find is that there are so many times I like turn back and say, who was that person? Who was that person that showed up in this way? You know, I had one major big fear. I'm not rid of fears, but I know what to do with them now. And God has brought me into this whole new place in my workplace. And I had to step out in my workplace. And the fear, I stood in my living room and cried like a baby, cried because I didn't want to do it. I was afraid. And yet I just, you know, did a fear turnaround. And I went out and I showed up. And by the end of that day, I was so happy and so rejoiceful at where my higher power was able to bring me because I've done this work, because I'm taking hold of the hand that won't let go. And the thing is that utter abandonment, you know, my food plan is not of my own making. My decisions around my food are not mine. They're not mine. I had something that was coming to mind the other day. You know, I've been losing weight every month. I gained 2 pounds last month. What am I doing? What am I thinking about? And it opened Pandora's box. And I had a call. You know, I had to call people and talk about what am I doing? You know, what am I doing here? I had to get my head out of the food again. It's a food plan, not of my own making, that I have to utterly abandon to God. And so I hope that answers your question. I'll pass with that.
Thank you, Amy G. Janice B., it's time for your question.
Hello, this is Janice B. in Vermont, recovered compulsive overeater. And thank you, Elaine, for sharing your story. You said at one point in your process that you were abstinent and that you didn't feel connected or the connection with other people. And that's something that is huge in my life. And I'm wondering now if you feel more connected to others and if so, how did it happen? What was the process? And with that, I pass.
Thank you. That's a great question, too. You know, that more than anything has been the thing where I turn around and I say, who was that person that just showed up? To be able to just really feel a deep connection. And you know what? When I don't feel it, I know what I can do. There are some just truths about my life that I had began to stuff down and not allow myself to feel from a very young age. And so I feel as though I've just come through the door. I've just stepped across the threshold thanks to this book and working this program and my loving higher power. So there are a lot of times I just turn around and say, wow, you know, who was that person who was at that party, at that work event, who was able to show up that way, who's beginning to do these new business connections. But I will say that the safety net that I feel, you know, I really want my family to be, I was telling my husband, I miss my family, but not the family I have. It's the family that I want. You know, I want my family to be the Waltons. I want them to be different than they are. And the power of acceptance and the serenity prayer and the chapter on acceptance and working the steps when I get a resentment and all of those things are helping me to show up in different ways. But there's still a lot of grieving and truth that I need to face that I've never allowed myself to face. So that's a place where at times I feel a deep connection, and when I don't, I kick into service. What can I bring to this? What questions can I ask? Can I get someone some coffee? Last night I had a big Christmas party. I'm also uncomfortable in crowds, and my husband's family is very big, and we had a big Christmas party yesterday. And I dedicated myself to serving others. You know, I'm the one who cut the cake. Did I want the cake? Not at all. I might as well have been, you know, portioning out rocks or something like that. Completely neutral to the food. I actually didn't eat anything that was put out. I made it something, and I checked an ingredient on a can of something that I bought before, and but I got a different kind. I got a generic brand and had sugar in it. And I was like, okay, well, I can't eat that food. What can I eat? I brought my own food. I ate it at my own time. It's just completely neutral. The food had nothing to do with the evening. And so all I can say is that it's a surprise. I don't know how it happens. It's a miracle. But if you do this work and you continue to do this work and you keep from running to the food to get your ease and comfort or as a buffer zone from people, my experience, my personal experience is that all that stuff goes away, and it's a process. It's a journey. Just like as we grow in relationship with a higher power, we grow in relationship with others. And I hope that answers your question. Thank you for it.
Thank you, Janice B. Excuse me. Kathy K.
Thank you, Melanie, for your service. Thanks, Elaine. It was wonderful to hear you today. And, you know, your relationship with God is something that I really admire, and I know how you work at it. And today I learned more about how it developed over time. And I'm wondering what you do with sponsees, if you've had this experience, who are quite agnostic when they start working on the steps, and how you help them develop that relationship.
Thank you, Kathy. You know, I love the word agnostic, which I learned here means, you know, that it is sort of like you believe in God, but you don't know, you know, you don't know. I continue to have areas in my life that I discovered that I don't know that there is a power greater than myself. And I really like, at one point I was really crushing on this guy, and I really was doing everything I could to get him in my life because I thought he would be my solution. You know, if only he liked me, everything would be okay. And I got a sense, an intuitive thought during that process, before I was married, that everything that man could offer me was a symbol compared to the ocean of love and provision that God had for me. And so I often recognize my own inadequacy in many different areas. But if I have access to a power greater than myself, that throughout the book it promises that this power can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves, that this power will give us an intuitive thought, that this power, I love somebody shares, you know, go to the ocean and try to stop a wave, that this power can, you know, can keep the waves at the shore, keep the stars in the sky, and hold me together without blowing apart, that you know, those are the things that I need to do daily to remind myself. In fact, I read every single day the fact that, you know, I'm in this world to do as God wills. I have a new employer. It's not me. It's not even my boss. I have a lot of fear around work. But my employer is a loving higher power that will give me everything that I need if I stay close to him and perform this work well. And so what I try to do is, we can't tell anybody who their higher power is. That's really, it's not our place. But I encourage people to define who their higher power is, to write out a description of their higher power. And for me, I often have to remind myself regularly, who is this higher power? When I'm feeling, you know, fear, doubt, and insecurity, I do the steps. If I'm still feeling it, I remind myself of who God is. And that helps me remember who I am. I was never meant to take on the world, solve every problem, know everything about everybody. I thought I was. I thought I had to have all the answers. I thought all of those things. You know, the difference between me and God is that God never thought he was me. So I do encourage a sponsee to work on that, to really think about what type of God, what type of higher power can you utterly abandon yourself to? And again, it's just the beginning. It's, you know, we come to believe that this higher power will restore us to sanity. What does that need to look like for you? Write it down. Write a description. Carry it around. Read it. Remind yourself of who this is every day that you're turning your will and your life over to, that you are, you've made a decision that is going to help you with your food. Just remind yourself of who that higher power is. And that's a tool that I've used. I also have personal stories that I'm happy to share with anybody that have been very meaningful to me. Some people have liked them as well out of my personal experience. That I, you know, encourage people to borrow. Another thing that I've heard in the rooms is act as if you don't feel it yet, act as if it's true. And gradually those things, as we experience them, they begin to become our experience, and that helps build our faith as well. I hope that answers your question. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Kathy Kay. Does anyone else have a question of Elaine today about her presentation?
I have a question. My name's Lisa.
Did you say Lisa?
Yes, it's Lisa.
What's the first initial of your last name, Lisa?
Lisa M.
M like Mary.
M.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead with your question.
Yes, hi. Thank you for your share. It's really good to hear everything that you talked about. But my question is around the fourth step. You talked about when you first were coming around, you were working on your fourth step, and it took like a year or 2 years, and you know, I kind of get why it would take that long, but then, you know, lately I've heard, oh, it shouldn't take that long, it should only take, you know, you should be through the steps in, you know, a few months, and I can't quite understand how you would get through a fourth step that quickly. So could you kind of explain a little more how you got through the steps so quickly? Thanks.
Thank you so much. So again, there are many ways to do the book, and there are some forms that I use, and there's some good information on a website. It's an outside issue, so I won't mention what it is, but it did talk about, you know, there's many ways to do the steps, and if the way that you've tried isn't working for you, try this one. And so I didn't specifically use that. I used some of the information on the site, but I was directed to, and by my sponsor. And so I went through the steps in a way that many people that I know have done, and they're recovered, and they look great, and they sound great, and they're sane, and they're awesome. And they were using this process, and many people in those rooms got through it quicker than I did. Others took a long time. But basically, for me, I think it's my own character defects that caused it to take so long, because I wanted to be perfect. I wanted to be the A1 star person who did the best fourth step that ever existed, and follow instructions explicitly, and got all kinds of input from all kinds of people on how to do it just right. And I searched fearlessly and thoroughly through my past, and I put down the name of probably every single person that I could remember, every institution I could think of. And then I had lots and lots of reasons why I resented them. And I really was digging things up. I was just digging it up. I had well over 500 people, places, and things. I had pages and pages, sometimes, you know, 5 pages of resentments towards a person, you know, slowly turning that around one resentment at a time. And it just took a really long time. And, of course, because it was taking a long time, I was dragging my feet on it at times. I would put it down for 3 months and then pick it up. And so that's why it took a really long time. When I worked with the sponsor that I work with on A Vision for You, I started working with her, I think, the beginning of July, and I finished making, I had some fulfillment on amends in addition to a living amends, which there are many that I continue to do today, but I had one follow-up, but I completed my amends, my face-to-face amends in October. I think it was Columbus Day weekend of 2013. And so, I don't know, was that 4 months maybe that it took? And the main thing is that my sponsor instructed me, put down the stuff that's taking up space in your head and your heart. Put down those things that are blocking you from others and God. Don't go back and try to remember, you know, your kindergarten teacher and that she didn't give you as many snacks as the kid next to her or, you know, stuff like that. She said, and I would be afraid. I'd be afraid I was going to miss something if I wasn't being fearless and thorough. And she said, you always have the 10 steps. And I have had instances of stuff that did not show up on my 4-step that have showed up after that I had the opportunity to process, because this is a lifelong process. With my first perspective, I really thought if I do this fearlessly and thorough, I'll have a problem-free life. But I hadn't peered into steps 10 and 11 where I realized I had continued to do this every day for a lifetime. I had utterly abandoned myself to this program. So it takes us all what it takes. But if we do the steps to the best of our ability with the direction of a big book guide and a higher power, we will get the promises. And there's promises in just about every step. And so I hope that every listener has an opportunity to experience those promises in their life, not just now, but forever, because we get to grow. We get to continue to grow. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa M.
This is Jean.
Hi, Jean.
Hi.
Good morning. What's the first initial of your last name?
J-E-A-N-N-E-M? No, wait a minute. Yeah, Ren. That's the first initial of my last name.
Would you say that one more time, please? I didn't catch up.
Jean M.
M like Mary. Okay, thank you. Go ahead with your question. Thanks so much.
I have first a comment and then a question, because of you talking about this leading to death. It sounds like I'm a lot older than you, and I've been abstinent a lot of years, but I can remember I didn't get into this program till I was 50. So I remember somebody, a doctor, saying to me, you're using your fork to dig your own grave. And that did not stop me. So, so it's like, and thank you, God, that I finally stopped, okay? And, you know, how I got there is like, this is your story, it's not mine. But the thing that you said that hit me, because I've said it for years, that using your fat was like a buffer. And this is how I thought. I thought, because of promiscuity and all that stuff, that there was a good gene and a bad gene, and the good gene was thin and the bad gene was fat. No, the opposite. Sorry. The good gene was fat. The bad gene was thin. So when I first got abstinent, I thought, oh, my God, what's going to happen to me? And what happened to me was, like you said, God. So I'd like you to elaborate a little bit more on how you felt about that.
Well, thank you so much for your comment. And, you know, I will say that this is a deadly disease, and I don't have any numbers or statistics, but, you know, I've heard that, you know, obesity is a leading cause of death in this nation, not the leading, but a leading. And I think more than alcohol or drugs. I'm not positive on those facts, but I know it's a real issue for us. And it makes me very, very sad when I go into like a convenience store or a gas station and I see that there's probably, you know, 1% of the products that they sell that that are actually healthy for you, and anything else is really not. It was deadly for me. I remember I could not go into a convenience store, buy gas or grocery store, anything without buying a candy bar. I just could not do it. So, but yes, that did become a buffer zone for me. And basically, I will say that I had a, you know, the thing that I grieved the other day was that I went back to the area that I lived. Somebody wanted to see where, you know, what it looked like where, you know, wanted to go back and revisit where we had lived. And as I, you know, left that place and was coming home and was in the safety of aloneness and the presence of God, I was able to recall a number of times that, you know, I had experienced some sexual abuse. And it was after one experience that I had, not in that area, another experience, I just set myself up for that with my people pleasing and everything. That there was a very public sexual abuse experience, and after that I began gaining weight because I didn't want to be attractive to people then. And then after that I didn't really have a choice when I gave up a pretty promiscuous lifestyle. I didn't really have a choice. I had to have the food. I had to have a sense of ease and comfort that I could control. And for whatever reasons, how I was living out my faith, that wasn't doing it for me until I came to these rooms. And now I'm able to easily access a sense of ease and comfort with God. And if I'm not able to easily access it, then I need to sit down and see what's blocking me. And I have a 10th step that I'm going to need to do. I hope that answers your question with that access.
Thank you, Jean. Anyone else with a question this morning for Elaine?
Sandy K.
Anna H.
Did you say Sandy K and then Anna H?
Cindy K.
Cindy K. Good morning, Cindy K. And then after you will be Anna H.
Hi. Thank you, Elaine, for your service. My question is, you spoke of entire absence, working the steps through that. I'm wondering, how do you deal with the sponsee who is reluctant to or refuses to give up certain ingredients that they have identified themselves? How do you handle that?
They're just like me. I was so delighted when somebody gave me a number of a vision for you. And when I came on, my first sponsor who you know came with me on my honeymoon and everything she was on the line. I was so delighted. And also, there was somebody that I had called in the midst of my battle of wills over wine who was on the line. And what she told me is that's just sugar in a glass. And I ended that conversation quickly because she was saying something I didn't want to hear. I didn't want to hear it because I wasn't ready to hear it. And so for me, I needed to go out and do a little bit more research and development. And if there's somebody who has identified something as an alcoholic food to them, something that sets up a phenomenon of craving, something that, for me, I use the red light, yellow light, green light program, where what definitely is a binge food and what definitely is a binge eating behavior or ingredient, and that my sponsee needs to be committed to stay away from those during the time that we work together. And then I have the yellow light, which is one of the things you're not so sure about, that you need to be in the safety of a clear mind, sound mind, healthy food plan too, and working the steps, through the steps, you know, working steps 10, 11, and 12 in order to begin to even consider experimenting them. And usually by the time they've done that, they don't want to go near their yellow light foods. But if they're still picking up red light foods, I wish I could say it's been my experience that that's never happened, or behaviors. I wish I could say that that's never happened, but that has happened for me quite a bit. And those people, I just feel like they're not ready. They need the food to convince them. I can't convince them, you know, I've heard the saying, this is not a program for people who need it. It's not a program for people who want it. It's a program for people who work it. There are many people, there are, you know, ways of working the steps out there where they believe that if you are eating while you do the process, you know, you will eventually give up the food. But for me, I go back to the alcoholic or the drug addict. You know, if I'm just smoking pot instead of shooting heroin, will that work for me? If I'm just drinking beer instead of drinking whiskey, will that work for me? To me, if I'm just eating, you know, a bag of M&Ms, will that work for me? For me, what happens is I get cloudy. I saw the difference when my mind, when the cloud lifted, the fog lifted, was so clear to me that 3 months after I put down flour and sugar, that every cell in my body woke up. And so I definitely have a clarity and an ability to receive this message that only came when I was abstinent from foods that were setting up a phenomenon of craving, bringing the ease and comfort that that only came with that. And so for me, a sponsee just isn't ready. And so I may direct them back to listening to meetings about steps 1, 2, and 3. I may have them do readings. Recently, somebody shared some writing for a sponsee that has happened with gone back into the food. But really, everybody has a journey. You know, I worked with 3 sponsors before I came to A Vision for You and achieved what I've achieved today, which with God's help, I'll be able to do. But I'm just, you know, I'm just like everybody else. If I have 25 years of recovery, sanity, work in the steps, I'm just as susceptible to that next bite if I don't do a diligent food plan in the steps every day. That's what I need to do in order to maintain this. So I hope that answers your question, and with that, I pass.
Thank you, Cindy K. Anna H., your question, please.
Hi, good morning. I just thank you so much for your qualification this morning and for being on the line. I just had a question. Mine's pretty simple. You said something, and I loved it, and I just didn't quite get it. I got it, but I didn't get it. I wanted to write it down. You said something about, and you said that, about working with others, and you also said it about being with God, and you said something about one day without God, God knows it, the second day you know it, and the third day. Anyway, I was wondering if you would repeat both of those things.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I can't take any credit for that. I heard it in the rooms. There's something else I heard in the rooms that has always helped me. I'm going to share 3 things. First of all, this person in my face-to-face meeting who I really admire often says, you know, that when he began working with a big book sponsor, they had them she said, write down all your binge food. So he did, and he gave it to her, and she said, that list isn't for me. That's for you. That's not your food. Another thing he always says is, if you have a resentment, that his sponsor told him, if you have a resentment, you may not eat over it today, and you may not eat over it tomorrow, but you will eat over it. And for me, that's true of fear and selfishness and dishonesty as well. But the thing that I had said was, yes, the first 2 you had exactly right. 1 day without God, God knows it. 2 days without God, you know it. 3 days without God, and everybody knows it. Thanks for your question.
Thank you, Anna H. We could probably take one more question if you have the time to kind of round out the hour. Elaine, would that work for you?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay. Anyone else would like to finish us out with one more question today? Maybe it worked out for itself. Thank you so much, everyone, and appreciate all the questions and the answers today.
Could I ask a quick question?
Sure. Yes, who is this?
My name is Victoria. My last initial is an L.
Good morning, Victoria L. Please go ahead with your question, and then we'll finish Thank you.
Yeah, it'll be very brief. I looked up this meeting online, and it said it was 6:30 Pacific time, and it sounds like it is not, and I'm really sorry that I did not get to hear Elaine share, as it sounds like it was very powerful. I did learn a lot from the questions that you did answer, and I so appreciate that. But could you please just confirm with me in Pacific time what time this meeting is?
I can. This is Melanie. I can do that for you. I've had that experience myself when I've gone to the OA website and looked up a meeting, and they give me a time. And the interesting thing is that they have a default time of Central Time. I have to purposefully select the time zone that I'm in that particular box in order for the meeting to show the time it is in my time zone area. And I was stung by that many, many times. And if you want to talk more about that, or I can lead you through that, let's talk afterwards and you can give me your phone number. But I have been stung by that very same thing, and I'm sorry for that. But this meeting is recorded, and as soon as the recording has been off and we do the closing, I'll give an information and the telephone number of how you can listen to the recorded meeting in its entirety, including questions and answering.
Okay,
thank you
great.
So much, Victoria. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yep, you betcha. You betcha. So that brings our meeting to a close today. And we will close this meeting like we always close our Sunday special edition meeting by reading page 164 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you tread the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.